Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks, welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast. I am Brian with Rob and Ashley, as always. Folks, how we doing this week?
Present. I am present. How are you, true love?
I am also here.
How about you, Brian? How are you feeling?
Yeah. Next question.
I'm here. It was a cold, shitty, wet weekend, and with multiple days of cold, shitty weather ahead, only going to bum me out this weekend because I probably won't get to go in any racing, but we'll talk about that later.
Yep.
Other than that, I'm all right, though.
Good.
Well, but, it's 75 degrees and sunny here, so I'm trying to wrap this shit up so I can go outside.
Yeah. Go hit some golf balls.
Go down to the putt-putt.
There you go.
Well, one place that we had some fun weather to deal with on the weekend was Richmond, where NASCAR made their return for the first time in 2024. And again... It was a weekend of racing. I don't know. I don't know what else to say other than that. There's a few things to talk about, but yeah, I don't know. Xfinity race. Did we watch it? I didn't, and we'll get to that in a second. But what about you two?
Okay, I watched it.
Yeah, I caught bits and pieces of it. I had to leave the house about halfway through. Right before Joey Gase threw a piece of his car at Dawson Cram, the best thing that's ever happened.
So, my brief. Moments watching it. So here's what happened with me on Saturday. I was planning on getting home to watch it. I had a buddy of mine from Cincinnati come out to ride bikes at the bike park, so I was doing that for a bit. I had a thrift store in the back. Get home, start the race a little bit late. Within a half an hour, my kitten manages to get outside and climbed about 25 feet up in the tree behind my house. Managed to get down, thankfully. Didn't have to call the fire department. But then I went on a caper searching for him, which led to me searching an abandoned house that I didn't know was abandoned behind me. That was weird. And let's see. I came back in. I saw the clip of Dawson Cram and Joey Gase. I saw that. And... then I saw a text from Ashley that Chandler had won, and then I was like, well, I'm not fucking bothering watching the rest of this shit, because it was boring as hell what I saw, other than those couple moments. So,
yeah. You know, from what I gather, it's just a short track race there. It was fine. The Xfinity cars always are a little bit better than Cup, typically, and I don't know, it's just pretty traditional. I mean, I hate calling Richmond a short track because it fucking isn't, but for NASCAR standards it is, but like...
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, it. I like the strategy aspect of it. You know, guys get strung out. It's a late model race. It is what it is, you know. So I have no problem with that. But yeah, when I saw Chandler won, and I didn't need to go through a whole Bible study at the end of the race with him like he typically lays out there, so I didn't bother watching the finish either. Once I got home.
Victory speech was... obnoxious.
He gives
Easter is the most important day of the whole year.
But no, he said Easter is the single most important day in world history.
Oh, that's even worse. That's even worse.
And as Rob said in group chat the other day, the day that they can't even decide on one day.
It rotates around the count. I'm sure there's a real reason behind that, but I don't know.
Well, I don't care.
I don't care either. So,
well, real quick, while we're mentioning that, there were a couple different drivers that had issues with Easter being the same day as the yearly tradition of Transgender Awareness Day. Just for those who are aware or unaware of this, March 31st has been Transgender Awareness Day for over 15 years now.
Long time.
Whereas Easter changes every year. There were a couple drivers that managed to tweet out very stupid things. Matt Tift and he deleted it. I'll give him credit for that. Somebody called him out, and he did delete it. But Austin Thoreau, who was a
Austin Terrio, buddy.
I don't know how to fucking pronounce it. I'm saying Thoreau, a nobody in Xfinity and trucks, a guy who accomplished nothing and who is now running for Congress.
Oh, he won some races and he got a concussion and kind of lost his deal after that. Let's be nice to Austin here.
Not for this. There's no reason to be nice.
Well, he's running for a Senate seat. And actually, I'll be honest with you. I said this to you guys. I'm not afraid to say it on the show. I actually kind of fucked with him politically a little bit when he first started popping up in politics. He seemed pretty reasonable, despite being a Republican, which I don't really have an affiliation. But, you know, typically I don't tend to side on some issues with them, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And now that he's kind of getting a little bit more in the big boy realm of things, he's kind of starting to pick a side and throw out talking points that you expect to hear, and it's kind of a bummer because, again, like, originally he kind of had some cool things to say and was all about bringing people together, but whatever, you know, it's politics, it is what it is.
Apparently Joe Biden just saying that it was Transgender Awareness Day really upset some people because, again, they don't know how dates work and don't know how holidays work, but next year it'll be on 420, which will be a much more funny
Hitler's
way
birthday.
Of celebrating Hitler's birthday, Stoner's holiday, and Easter.
Columbine,
So that'll be fun next year.
All the great American holidays rolled into one.
Mm-hmm. But back to the race. Bubba Pollard had a great day.
Anyway.
He ended up finishing sixth and ran well all day, so that was really cool to see. I'm sure
started 37th, so that was great to see him.
Yeah, he really fucked it up in qualifying after having a real hot rod, but then he managed to put on a show for everybody, and I think everyone kind of expected him to be able to handle it. And he certainly did, and I mean, who knows if he's got, you know, $500,000 lined up for another ride. I don't think he put any of his own money into that. I think that was just Dale Jr. and sponsors.
Dale Jr. said it was all Rheem.
Yeah,
but so, I'd be shocked if we don't see him back in that car at some point later.
I would hope so. It'd be sick to have another, like, old man rookie showing up.
Yeah. I mean, we saw what, you know, the Josh Berry pipeline has led to.
That's true, yeah. It's very old school. And again, like, Cup rookies used to look like Bubba Pollard. So I, for one, as a traditionalist, would love to see that again. So.
For those who, again, were too young, go look up Jimmy Hensley, 1992's Winston Cup Rookie of the Year. I think he was about 46.
Jake Trickle was in his 50s when he won Rookie of the Year in 87, I think. Was it his 50s? Late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, he wasn't 40 or 50s then, but
Famous, really famous quote from him from his speech at the Waldorf Astoria in New York, saying he's just happy to see a young guy like him get a chance in the big leagues. So hopefully Bubba Pollard gets his shot too.
Mm-hmm. He was the highest finishing junior motorsports car too.
Well, you know, Brandon Jones helped out with that a little bit.
That was Saturday pretty much, and then on a Sunday, again, a race. It was dominated by Truex, and was it Larson that was leading most of the laps?
Larson handled the front half of the race when the rain tires were on, and then after that, but his car kind of faded as the night went on and the runs got longer and things turned into a more of a traditional strategy deal.
But speaking of the rain, looked like it was going to be shit weather all night and a real struggle to get this race in, but thankfully the clouds managed to part within, you know, pretty good amount of time before the start, and we got the start on the rain tires, which is the first time this has happened in a points race in the Cup Series. And, you know, fan reaction was shockingly mixed online, but again, the drivers loved it. It was entertaining racing, like last year at Wilkesboro. There was no reason to complain about that.
The only real issue was that pit road didn't get dried off and they couldn't do competitive pit stops because they would slide into each other and, you know, kill some, you know, college athletes down there. That's what I gather. So, but, you know, honestly, and people were bitching about that. Well, you should never start a race with pit roads wet and blah, blah, blah. It's like, look, would you rather watch jet dryers for 2 hours on television and bitch about that? Or would you rather watch some of the best short track racing we've seen at Richmond in a long time on those tires? I say just run them everywhere. Run those groove tires everywhere we go.
Take them to Martinsville next week.
Seriously, please, run them in the dry.
Yep. After
close the track down. Who gives a shit? Whatever you gotta do. I don't give a fuck, man.
But after so far a pretty good season of races and not the worst calls by NASCAR. They managed to have their first bad weekend with a couple different shitty calls that people weren't happy about.
Well, here's the thing. On our channel, and I took a liberty with this and kind of called out most of NASCAR Twitter, encouraging people to just shut the fuck up and enjoy the race. It's a Sunday night. You're probably full of ham and candy or whatever it is you do on Sunday. You know, church is over. You know, if that's what you do, if you don't, you're at home. You know, maybe you got to go to work on Monday. Some places don't open for Easter Monday. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You got a nice Sunday evening at home with a race on that started on time, granted, and you're still going to bitch about it. So I encouraged everyone very kindly in a very eloquent way to just shut the fuck up and enjoy it. And I posted this right before Kyle Busch kissed the wall, put one of those zone pouches in his lip, I would imagine. And then he just kind of brushed the outside wall and brought a caution out right in the middle of a very serious pit strategy battle, which, again, I know a lot of newer fans might not enjoy that. And Fox certainly doesn't do the greatest of jobs of portraying that. It's very hard to do that. But this completely changed the complexion of the race. I know a lot of people then actually had a real good reason to be pissed off, myself included, but because I ran my mouth, I couldn't talk shit. So you get one, you know. How'd you guys feel about that nonsense?
Yeah, I mean, he just barely smooched it. And then I've never seen a caution thrown faster in my life.
No.
Yeah, I was confused because it was one of those deals where the caution was out and then, you know, another Fox move, like you don't know why there's a caution out until like 5 minutes later, and then when you see it, it's like, what the fuck was that?
Well, they showed the replay of Kyle going down the back stretch, and it looked like he was shooting debris out of the back of the car, which I thought maybe something broke, or, you know, surely it's not just the marbles coming out of the back of his car from the top groove, but sure enough, that's all it was, just a little bit of rubber. And I don't know, Lord knows you can't run on a racetrack that has rubber on it, so you know, kudos to NASCAR for thinking of the safety of the drivers and completely killing a strategy race, which, again, it would have cycled out to be probably about the same thing we ended up seeing. But, man, what a disappointment that call was. Yeah, I'm still pissed about it.
That was annoying.
Yeah, it was what it was. But then towards the end of the race, there was another caution and then the other shitty call or lack of a call happened. You know, Martin Truex was out to lunch. It was going to be his race to lose.
Still bitching, but you know.
Hell yeah. Well, we'll get into that. But
Bubba and Larson had a little bit, which was kind of fun to watch.
Logano was hauling ass to traffic. Again, it worked out to be a pretty good little short track race. Yeah, they're not 16 wide, you know, going into the trioval or whatever. But you know, Logano's chasing him down. There's other battles going on, so these guys just can't completely lay over and let him through, you know, especially at a track where you got to keep that momentum and the front stretch is a giant curve. Not like you can just let him by, you know. So it was shaping up to be pretty good, and Joey Logano really was hauling the mail, as was Denny Hamlin. And even Larson was kind of hanging in there a little bit, but he was pretty much cooked by then.
Well, he ended up finishing well because, again, Bubba and Larson got together, and it was really just kind of a racing incident. Larson was getting loose a little bit. Bubba happened to be there. Larson spun off his front end.
Nobody's fault.
Nobody's fault. Larson ended up actually gaining a spot, I think, out of the pits, and Bubba had another dog shit pit stop and lost all his track position. And that actually, real quick, that led to a very fun interaction, very wholesome interaction between those two after the race, where Bubba came up and surprised Larson by apologizing. It did kind of catch him out of nowhere, and we remember the last time those two got together. But this was much more funny and wholesome. Larson was already in a good mood. He couldn't have given a shit about that. You know, again, it worked out for him. Didn't work out for Bubba. They had a nice little moment, which, again,
Bubba pretty much
out.
Begging Larson to get him back, which was kind of funny.
that was cute.
Well, the internet had an interesting reaction to that, too, I thought.
Of course they did. They're always
good. They were very divided. A lot of them were like, oh my gosh, I finally respect Bubba for the first time. And,
Well, I didn't see that. I didn't see that reaction. I only saw the negative ones.
I saw a lot of those.
That's also my opinion. I've kind of like cooled by my dislike for Bubba after that a little bit.
Then there was also the other half who were convinced that Bubba wrecked him on purpose so that Denny Hamlin could win. And Bob Pockris also asked Larson that. I was like, what the fuck kind of question is that?
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, Kyle Larson intentionally got crossed up so Bubba could take him out.
All for Denny.
All for Dennis, yeah.
Yep. But speaking of Dennis, after the final restart, there was the big controversial moment where Denny may or may not, oh, let's just say he did.
Oh, he fucking did.
He jumped the restart a little bit. And NASCAR did not make that call, and that led to a very pissed off Martin Truex Jr., who really outshone Austin Hill's whining from the week before.
Even Austin called that out on Twitter.
Austin managed to hand him the box of tissues for, virtually. Truex was running into Larson. He was running into Hamlin. He was just – I don't know if you guys listened to Denny's podcast, but no. Truex, later on that night, I think they had a little text exchange, and he was just like, I just lost my fucking mind there for a minute, guys.
No.
Yeah. He did chill out a little bit after the fact. But, Denny won, and he was very coy about jumping the restart on his podcast,
His honesty has certainly bit him in the ass before, so
it has. Yeah. But NASCAR doesn't seem to be penalizing him. Elton Sawyer gave a very how to parse this response, but he definitely made it seem like it was a judgment call by NASCAR, and they didn't want to make that decision so late in the race. To paraphrase it, I guess. But
ask Shane Van Gisbergen how that went last week.
Yeah. NASCAR must have been watching Fox's coverage of the restart.
Fucking jumped the shit out of that. But I don't know. I've always felt that the restart zone is stupid. It's stupid. I know why they put it there, because they didn't want guys jimmy jacking and fucking around and, you know, brake checking people and stacking everybody up. So that's why they did it. But, I mean, again, old man Rob coming in here to lay down the incredible logic that maybe the flag man should just control shit, and as soon as the green comes out, if you're the leader, you already get coddled enough with lane choice as the leader. You get to pick the lane you're going in. It's like, what do you want him to do? Like, give Truex a 5-second head start on everybody, and then everyone else gets the green? Like, what the fuck? Like, if you fuck up the restart, which seems like Truex would have anyway, because he likes to choke sometimes, and he did this time for sure.
Denny also said that he had to go when he went, because I guess Joey was right behind him going. So he's like, well, if I don't go now, he's gonna run into me and fuck everything up. So that was his excuse.
I just think this coddling of the lead, the control car, is so silly. Like, if the green drops and you spin your tires, you don't get a good start, that's on you.
Yeah.
Like, let's go back to the old way here. You know, I'm not suggesting we, like, race back to the yellow or anything like that, but let's let the flag man actually have some real control over this. And if Denny actually does jump a restart, do what every other fucking short track in the United States does and throw a yellow real quick, warn him you're going to the bat next time, or just send his ass to the back for doing it and call it a day. It's not that hard to officiate these things, especially when we're seeing, like, phantom cautions for Kyle Busch, you know, thinking about hitting the wall. And, you know, giving track penalties out like candy for Easter the week before. I'm sure that definitely played into them not wanting to overstep their boundaries and decide a race again from the penalty crew. But my goodness, like, how fucking shitty is that? And again, I really enjoyed this race a lot. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was one of the better Richmond races. I know a lot of people don't agree with me, and I think Jeff Gluck's poll has it at 50% as it was a good race. But I don't know. I really enjoyed the shit out of that. And also, you can kind of blame the coverage for not being able to present this in a good way, because everybody I knew that was at the racetrack, and we all had a lot of friends out there, not a single bad review coming from anyone in the stands.
Well, there definitely weren't many reviews from the stands, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. And again, quick shout out. I'm not a Denny Hamlin fan, never have been, don't plan on it, but anytime I get to see old Andy Newsom get so excited, which, by the way, that guy, I think Denny needs to put him on payroll and fly him to every race, because anytime that fucker is on the property, Denny manages to win. So always cool to see him so excited. I even sent him a little video myself, taking my Larson hat off and drinking a beer in his honor. You know, because a win for Hamlin is a win for Andy, and Andy's as good as they come. So I'll take it.
So what you're saying is we need to figure out how to get Andy to Phoenix.
Absolutely.
No, we're going to keep Andy out of Arizona. Fuck that shit. No. He don't need to see that. He can watch it from home. Fortunately, he's always taking pictures of the world finals, so I don't think he'll be able to make it out there. But
thank God.
But yeah, always excited to see Andy excited. And
if you're a Hamlin fan and you haven't seen Hamlin win in person and you want to, Yeah. Go to a race with Andy Nason.
Yeah,
instead
of a best.
To suffer through several Hamlin wins in person, go with Andy Newsom.
Every fucking time, dude. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm going to the 600 with him next month. So I already know who's going to win that fucking race. So go ahead and get your bets in, y'all.
Yeah, I'll be sitting there at 1 a.m. angry, but still happy for Andy. So. Well, you know, I think we could all agree, though, the man who finished in last, Mr. Corey LaJoie, had a real rough day, and that brought us a bunch. That brought us our own joy, J-O-I-E, you know. So. The LaJoie of a bad night for this podcast. So,
where did Hosafar finish? I didn't even
finished
look.
27th.
Sure. Yeah, okay, real bad night for Spire. Kind of uncharacteristic for what we've seen from them. Hosafar was by far the best car because the other two guys were 35th and 36th. So, yeah. Zane Smith. You know, really testing that whole future of NASCAR theory that people had put on him. I don't know if it was his fault or not, but, you know, Jesus.
I mean, he's already signed Trackhouse, and that's a whole, God, they're going to have a lot to deal with in the next couple of years. But, I mean, yeah, Zane is really not showing up like you thought he would.
No. Yeah.
Still finished better than Corey, so.
Yep. Yes. That. Everybody wins, so.
But I guess leaving this weekend, the one negative thing to talk about in a sense is, yes, it's probably going to be the last time we see two Richmond dates on the calendar. Yep. You know, again, granted it was Easter Sunday and it was a Sunday night and all that stuff, but there were, man, I wouldn't want to say there was less than 25% of the stands.
They were
full.
Saying what it was like 40,000 sold or something like that. And with the rain and all that, I didn't look like that many people even showed up. Yeah. So
40,000 people does not look like that. I'll tell you that much. There's no fucking chance there were more than 15 there, I would say, if that.
15 people.
15 people, yes.
Andy and his friends and then Brady Heck and Becca from Holy Roller. That was it.
With their bald eagle beer bong that they had.
Yeah. another reason why I think I really enjoyed this race is because Brady didn't bring a scanner with him. And here's a telltale sign that nobody showed up. I was able to text him the entire time with no delay. So that's a bad sign when that can happen. Yeah. But I was giving him updates.
Service.
Exactly. There was plenty of cell service for everybody. You could watch Netflix out there if you wanted to. It wouldn't be a problem. They don't have Wi-Fi there, to the best of my knowledge. But yeah, he didn't have a scanner. So I was kind of having to really tune in and try and help him out there and kind of let him know what was going on since, you know, you can't really hear the PA when you're there. So it was nice to really tune in because oftentimes I'll have people over and we're drinking beers and hanging out. This is just me in my basement sitting there, really paying attention, talking to people at the track. And that really made it really enjoyable and really gave me the sickest case of FOMO I've ever had in my life. Yeah. And yeah, it's a shame that Richmond sounds like they're going to lose one of their two dates. But look, I had to deal with the same thing up here at Loudoun for very similar reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, as much as I hate to not have two cup races close to me, and I'm sure all the folks in Richmond would attest to this as well, it's better for the sport when you only go to places once. Like what?
I did enjoy seeing them back under the lights there, though.
Perfect.
Yeah, that it should always be under the lights there. I don't know why they would go back to a day race.
Absolutely. But, yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Yep. But looks like from the notes, according to Chris Myers, which I don't know if he's necessarily the best source for this, but he is saying there's not going to be an Easter race or the Coliseum, which I don't think either one of them. I don't. The Easter isn't a surprise. The Coliseum's not a surprise. He said something about another track. You can expect racing in Southern California at a track yet to be determined.
It won't be Long Beach, that's for sure. So
yeah, it won't be Long Beach.
Kind of puts a little bit more wood on the fire for the Dodger Stadium, whatever it ends up being. So
yep. More news. We have. It looks like the Stuart Haas Racing rumors are back up again with them potentially selling off some charters, which would not really be a shock at all. I mean, honestly, I'm kind of surprised that Stuart Haas is still even considering being a team, but you know, if they
Jesus.
Again, listen, again, he's going to be having a kid next year, hopefully. The drag racing thing is taken off. He doesn't seem to be happy with NASCAR at all.
Well,
he's got dirt track.
Gene Haas is the one putting a lot of money in there, so
yeah,
I would imagine we'll see Chase Briscoe and Josh Berry up in there. And I don't know, maybe Carson Ho- not Carson Hosepar. Who else is there? Who fucking knows? Noah Gregson is the guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, Gregson's having a decent season this year.
He
so
is.
I mean,
yeah,
but you know, there's
legacy career.
Yeah, there's talk of you know, JRM moving up to Cup and all the other things, and we'll just let those rumors simmer because, I mean, it's still too early in the season.
Yeah. Chris Myers doesn't open his mouth often in this regard, but when he has in the past, he was the first one to talk about the Coliseum coming around, and he was right. So I would kind of trust what he has to say about at least the Easter and track stuff. He didn't mention anything about Stuart Haas. My brain kind of jumped back a couple minutes there, but yeah, if he speaks on the Stuart Haas thing, you better listen to him because he might know what he's talking about. Or wait for Jordan Bianchi or something to talk about it.
Well, yeah, the Stuart Haas thing was by the Sports Business Journal, so I mean that's a pretty legit source. So.
Yeah, agreed.
Moving on to a track that Ashley and I went to last year, and I know Ashley at least be attending this year. I doubt I'll be there, but supposedly there is a moonshine cave somewhere hidden in the North Wilkesboro facilities, and yeah, this past week they were doing some construction and replacing some seats in the stands, and apparently there was a sinkhole that opened up and exposed a space underneath the grandstands that who knows what it was used for. Apparently maybe this was the long rumored still, but nobody's seen inside this, so who the hell knows.
Yeah. Pretty cool way to announce there's a hole in your front stretch grandstands, though. I really appreciated that way to make lemonade out of lemons right there. Don't worry, folks. There's a piece of history in the giant hole where you all stood last year.
Yeah, that's basically where we sat when I went to that first race to see Junior run his model.
Well, at least if you would have fallen in the hole, your little article on Wikipedia would have had a cool little factoid in there. So,
yeah, maybe I would get like lifetime free tickets.
Yeah, or you'd just be buried underneath the grandstands for all eternity. Like Waylon Jennings and the Highwaymen when he fell into the dam when they were building that. So,
I did see that I think starting today or this week, they're finally going to do single-day ticket sales for North Wilkesboro, so you don't have to be forced to buy a full weekend package.
Good.
They're still expensive, though.
Yeah. Very good.
So, for those of us who were around in the 90s and 2000s, NASCAR fandom, that is, there were plenty of NASCAR restaurants. I mean, there was obviously the NASCAR Cafe. Mm-hmm. There were a couple other smaller, independent NASCAR-themed restaurants. And, you know, throughout the years, those have all kind of gone to the wayside. But it looks like, for some reason, in the St. Louis airport, there's going to be a new NASCAR-endorsed restaurant. Why St. Louis? I don't know. Hopefully Uncle
Gateway,
Kenny does,
right?
I guess, yeah. But hopefully Uncle Kenny does a nice review there as soon as it opens. I have a feeling he'll be passing through there.
Yeah, we'll check in with him and get a full review on the place. I just think it's cool there's going to be an actual NASCAR-themed restaurant in an airport where they will refuse to put the race on for me when I'm passing through. Just one more place to get pissed off at so I can watch some, like, fucking St. Louis Blues highlights or some shit. But
yeah. The pictures they showed, the renderings looked very sterile.
It's an airport, you know? What do you expect? Well, they've also been doing that thing with DoorDash where they had like a ghost kitchen running where you could buy like Chase Elliott chicken tenders and
I think you get like NASCAR wings or something.
Yeah, the Martinsville hot dog or some approximation of that, which is probably not even close to what it actually is. But it'll be cool. And again, like, just as proof that I will go to this thing even if it sucks. I like to think that I'm not susceptible to advertising, but I do smoke Winston's, so that'll tell you something. And I will be going to this restaurant if I ever connect through St. Louis without question, based on the branding alone, and I'll be disappointed when I'm just begging them to put truck practice on and they won't do it. So
I can't imagine I'll ever be at the St. Louis airport, but
yeah, can you? Yeah. I don't think so.
So last week we did our first record review with the Intimidator album, which people seem to like, and again, that record's getting a lot of traction online. I know those dudes just posted a video of them practicing to play live, so hopefully they actually do go on tour and I get to see that. But
very cool.
In other news, a different record came out by a band called Restrictor Plate, and it was titled the Slamtona 500.
Yeah, now this is my shit right here, folks.
This is a 5-song EP. Now we're not going to be reviewing this on the show. It's only 14 minutes long, but you can listen to it wherever you listen to streaming music, but this record is ignorant slam metal.
Fuck
and
yeah, it is.
When I say ignorant, it starts off with a sample of the news clip of Tony Stewart killing Kevin Ward.
Yep.
And the Weed ends Band. With this is that's the first song, and then ends with Kevin James giving his Start Your Engines call to Daytona 500.
Beautiful record. If you like to turn your brain off like I do, this is my shit right here. This is right in the zone for me. I love this shit. They're also from Richmond, and they do go to races, which is why they probably put that Kevin Ward clip up front, because they knew what the fuck they were talking about. But I'm a big fan of this.
I did see this have even more traction online than that other record. Like, I had a bunch of people send it to me that don't, you know, really watch racing.
Oh, same. Yeah.
Hell of an album cover too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a little less palatable than the last record. As if you're not into really gnarly, like super heavy, ignorant, like mosh and, you know, more extreme shit than Judas Priest, whatever the fuck you want to say, influenced the Intimidator album.
I turned it off after two songs. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you weren't ready to get in the pit with your boys.
Well, Rob and I both enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really, really love the shit out of that. So they also have a, you can also buy stuff from them. So go check them out. Restrictor Plate from Richmond, Virginia.
We do have one more little piece of media to talk about.
Boy,
though,
do we.
Rob found this. So,
well, actually, Kyle Armstrong, friend of the program and a previous guest, he sent this to me. He's like, you guys got to talk about this shit on the show. And I don't even know the name of the guy who writes this stuff. I'm sure maybe you actually made notes, Brian, but there's a guy who will do fan fiction, alternate reality writing based on drivers who died and sort of alternate history of the Cup Series. And Kyle sent me one of what would have happened if Alan Kowicki had not passed away in that plane crash. And my goodness.
I went through this and I only took a couple notes because it's ridiculous. But
it is ridiculous.
So Alan does not have his plane crash in 92. So he ends up becoming a 4-time Cup champion.
He still kills off Davey Allison, though. What the fuck, man?
Both Davey and Dale die in this scenario. But Alan ends up winning 62 races, like 3 Daytona 500s. It misses an entire season in the midst of all this. Let me look at my notes here and see what else I wrote.
I guess if you were going to keep Davey Allison alive, it wouldn't have been historically accurate enough, you know, since we're making shit up anyway. So he still died in a helicopter crash.
But in 1998 he had 13 wins, apparently. Now Alan never he only had one season where he won more than one race, and that was two races, and that was the year he won the championship. So I don't think any of this would have ever happened.
No.
If you were to ask me how Alan's career would have, you know, panned out if he had lived, you know, we all saw what happened in 93, 94, 95, how all these drivers decided, oh, we can start our own teams and do what Alan did, and every single one of them failed. Now,
Ricky Redd.
Alan still had Hooters behind him, you know, very strongly, so I'm willing to bet he would have had Hooters for a while, because Hooters stayed in the sport for many, many years. They're still in the sport now. They haven't won because of the Hooters curse, but they're still around. So maybe the Hooters curse would not have been a thing.
Speaking obviously. Of real tangible shit, the Hooters curse.
Hey, listen.
I'm not arguing with you on that.
Just ridiculous. We'll have to post the link in the show notes so you can read it all yourself. They did use he used photos of Rick Mast's Hooters car, and he said in 2001 Alan decided to run Pontiacs and Busch because it was cheaper. So that was convenient to use that photo. And then apparently Alan ended up driving Robbie Gordon's Jim Beam number 7 Ford at some point. Yeah. So
I'm pretty sure he also borrowed a direct quote from Kyle Petty of watching when Alan died and they drove his collar out of the track, saying how sad it was sitting in the hotel room. He just lifted that directly and attributed it to Alan. So, pretty cool there. Also, if you guys like this kind of shit, there's also an alternate history of Dale Earnhardt's career where he immediately kills off Steve Park. So... someone's gotta die.
Jeez.
And as a modified guy, I take that personally. So,
well,
Steve Park is still alive. So,
yeah, That's our
only
big skimmed media
through
run.
This, so
yeah.
My brain can barely retain like actual real stats. Yeah. I did not need to like throw a bunch of fake shit in there
no.
to confuse my brain.
And that's a shit ton of fiction, my friend. So
yep. Well, speaking of Rob being a mod fan, there was a mod race on Friday, so let's lead into our septic tank.
That's right, baby. The best race of the weekend, as far as I am concerned. And again, I'm always going to be biased towards the NASCAR Modified Tour, any sort of ground pounder action. But the race on Friday night was fucking awesome. Really nice, intense battle pretty much all the way through for the lead between Justin Bonsignor and Ron Silk. Which, again, this is like the 150th time this has happened. It's how last season played out, and I think we're going to see it again this year. Justin getting him right at the end there. I forget what the difference was. They were side-by-side coming to the line, though, because of a caution, which is great. Again, anytime you can watch a modified race, please do. Again, little surprised that Ryan Preece wasn't involved. Usually he'll bring his car out. I didn't ever hear a reason why he wasn't there. But Bobby Labonte was there, and he overcorrected and slammed directly into the cookout sponsored portion of the wall, which is also his sponsor on the modified. So that was really, really nice branding for him, an activation, if you will. But he took out Patrick Emmerling, so... I mean, really, if you want to tie this back to Joey Gase, Joey and Patrick Emmerling own an Xfinity team together, so those guys are broke as shit right now because they have a bunch of torn-up race cars after going down to the Commonwealth. I'm also really mad at Jake Johnson for that stupid-ass move he put on Austin Beers 12 laps in, just kind of sailed it in. He says he wheel-hopped a little bit, but it didn't look like that. Looked like he just kind of, like, kept his foot to the floor and completely, like, used up Austin Beers and sent him into the fence and completely destroyed that car. Who knows if they're bringing that to Thompson? They're on the entry list. I'm sure they'll be using a backup, though. So, but again, the highlights for this race, the full race, it's all on YouTube. Unfortunately, I don't think the modified races are even shown as part of the NBC Sports package anymore on television. But the good news is it is all on YouTube, so I recommend checking it out. At least the highlights. Again, it was a fucking awesome race, and a damn shame that the crowd was so light for that as well. I don't think they really do a good job of promoting that series to begin with. And to have it so disconnected from the rest of the weekend is a pretty huge disappointment. And I know up here at Loudon, they'll put the modifieds on the same day as Xfinity. And I know we have a different thing. A lot of the drivers on that tour are local, so that ends up being a really highly attended show up here. There's, you know, basically a bigger crowd for the mod race than the Xfinity race when they come up here for Loudon. So I would like to see them try and at least tie the event together, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, to be fair, though, people were saying all weekend in Richmond there was, like, no indication throughout the city that there's a race going on.
Yeah, well, I told Brady, hey, you going to the modified race tonight? Brady, of course, Diesel Wild Plains bass player, singer of Holy Roller, good dude, my son. He is my son. And I was like, you going to the track tonight? He's like, why? I'm like, are you fucking serious?
The most Brady response.
And he's pretty well tuned in these days too, so the fact that, you know, someone who's actively paying attention to the shit has no idea that one of the best kept secret in NASCAR is happening in his town is a pretty big bummer, especially when the Smart Tour is really making big strides down south and those car counts are huge. By the way, Ryan Newman picked up a win at Tri-County in the Smart Series this weekend, so that was pretty cool to see. But yeah, good modified race all around. Like I said, YouTube has the highlights and the full show, so make sure you watch that. Over in the dirt world, though, I think this broke right after we finished recording, as these things tend to do. There was a review done. Of course, big dirt late model penalty is being handed down by World Racing Group for Devin Moran, Kyle Brunson, and Bobby Pierce for tire doping last week. They were suspended for a month. Big monetary fines. Like, it was completely screwing their seasons. Last week, we had mentioned there wasn't really a clear path forward for any sort of review to be done. Apparently that actually did take place. There is an independent board, pretty similar to what NASCAR has, where it's an independent group of folks who will take a look at the rule book and the situation and kind of figure it out. And they determined that the suspensions were a little too harsh. They actually fined Bobby Pierce a little bit more than he had originally been handed, but they can all race, and that worked out real well for him. Even though it wasn't sanctioned by anybody who this would have affected, Bobby Pierce picked up a preliminary win at the Nippy 50 at, I'm not going to try and say this track name, Makakita Raceway. I don't know, but the Nippy 50 is a cool race. A lot of big cars there. Ricky Thornton Jr. picking up the big win, of course, in the 50 on Saturday night. But those guys will be racing. No word on if Bobby Pierce will be racing in the World of Outlaws full time and come back with his tail between his legs, angry as fuck, or if he'll try and do something else. He's not really going to miss anything as a result of this, so he can kind of pick up where he left off. Devin Moran already running Lucas Oil. They didn't seem to give a shit about the tire deal. And same with Bronson. So we'll see what happens with Bobby Pierce, but I think it was the right call. And I'm glad that the World Racing Group has allowed this challenge to stand. And it'll be cool to see Bobby Pierce in particular back out there and chase a title somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that seemed like a real shit deal. So I'm glad that got all overturned because nobody was happy with it.
Yeah. And again, it sucks. Like, again, if you're going to officiate something, you better play by your own rule book. But it does suck to see like the star of the series completely withdraw based off of one penalty when there wasn't a whole lot of recourse. So again, happy to see that get sorted out. A lot of other stuff got canceled this weekend. World Outlaws got canceled due to wind. I think they did actually race. I didn't catch the race on Saturday night, unfortunately. I was too busy watching some other shit. But
where are they supposed to race?
Oh, they were down in, I believe it was in Texas. And it was just way too windy for the cars to get out there. Everyone showed up, but I think they were like 50, 60 mile an hour gusts. And when you have a giant wing on top of your car, that doesn't play nice. So, but that's the short track septic tank for this week. Lots of racing coming up this weekend. Again, I don't know how much of it I'll be talking about because I will be at the Icebreaker at Thompson Speedway. You can watch that on Racing America, with the exception of the NASCAR modified race on Sunday. That'll be on Flow Racing. And again, I recommend highly that you do yourself a favor and try and catch as much of that event as possible. I won't be there on Sunday, but I'll be there all day Saturday, weather permitting. It looks like they'll be able to get it in. It's just going to be a little bit cold. The Tri-Track modified series is the headliner for that day, as well as the Pass Tour. So a lot of great racing, big car counts for both of those races, and all the local track sanctioned series will be there as well. And again, Thompson's a fucking awesome place to visit. So if you happen to be there, come say what's up.
I said I was going to be going to Attica on Friday, but don't think that's going to be happening because as of yesterday, there was 40 degree temps and rain in the forecast. And today that changed to snow. So I'm almost gross. Sure I will not be there on Friday. However, Fremont is running Saturday, and it looks to be a little bit better weather-wise, so maybe I'll go to that. We'll see. I do have some stuff going on Saturday, so I may not
just
be able to make it.
Toss your Carhartt on, bring some Fireball nips, freeze your ass off, and have a good time, man. Don't miss out on these things.
I'm not wearing a Carhartt. You know how many fucking driver's seat jackets I have? I gotta break those things out once in a while.
Well, there you go. His M&M's Ernie Irvin fire suit.
No. I do not have the M&M's one. That would not be
boring. Yeah, you make some friends wearing that for sure. But
I do have another Ernie Irvin jacket that people would accuse me of. Oh, I was there when he died, so that's cool. So anyways, that brings us to...
I just saw that North Wilkesboro released a video of the Moonshine Cave, like the inside of it.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know how these grandstands have not collapsed.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big hole.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they'll be fixing
it. I'm sure they'll fix it up nice. So put some rebar in that shit or something.
Well,
so.
It needs some help.
But that's the short track septic tank for this week. We'll go ahead and flush her on down.
So this week's video of the week is about Dave Marcus, like I said last week. We watched the video of, I don't know his first name, but Stapleton 42, who... I'll get into my thoughts on him throughout the video, but you know, he manages to go and interview these old drivers and go to their shops and stuff. And I mistakenly thought that Dave had moved back to Wisconsin and his shops were in Wisconsin, but no, they're in North Carolina in the Asheville area. So there's actually a much better chance of me getting down that way at some point. And again, I'll get to that as we watch this video, but they went to two different shops of his. One, the shop that he rented from the late 60s to the late 80s, and then his shop that he still owns today. Now, to start this video, there's really... the production value is not that great on it, in the sense that, like, there's no introduction. He's got this text with different little tidbits rolling across the screen, the screen at the beginning, which I was not a huge fan of, but...
No, again, it was too many and too random.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really watch this guy's stuff. You know, I've watched a couple clips here and there, but he's not really my style, even though what he does, his actual content is my style, but his presentation just isn't for me. But I love Dave enough that
it's a little slow. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So this first garage they go to, is just like this shitbox old concrete building that is now like a tire shop. And the funny part of this video is just the interactions that Dave has with the people working there.
Yeah.
like it's you know, I forget what it's called, like Los Tires or something. So it's definitely run by some Hispanic dudes. Los Amigos is the name of the tire shop.
Nice.
at one point, Dave notices they put in a new garage door, and he asks the guy that's running the shop, "How long have you had this hole?" I thought that was a good quote.
Also, I want to point out how Dave Marcus looks just about the same as he did when I was a kid.
100%.
He really does not look like he's in his late 80s, early 90s, whatever the hell he is now.
Yeah.
He's,
I think he's 83.
83, okay. So he's
he looks healthier than I do, I'll tell you that. So.
Yeah, for an 83-year-old, looks good.
Yeah.
You know, Dave's telling all these stories. He's talking to the guy that runs the shop, and the guy is definitely kind of just smiling and nodding. None of these guys have any idea what the fuck NASCAR is.
Not their first language.
Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, NASCAR is certainly not their first language. Yeah.
Dave couldn't remember if he moved out of there in 85 or 87. It was 87. Talks about how, you know, the building was only $75 a month to rent, which is, you know, cheap. He was a one-man show back then. He was literally the only person working in the garage. Didn't have a phone in there. What he had done, and I thought this was kind of clever, he couldn't afford a phone, but he needed a phone at the shop to take sponsor calls and stuff because, you know, he couldn't be running back and forth to the house all the time. So apparently the phone company put a payphone in at the shop for free, which allowed him to get those calls that he needed and make calls when he needed to. And also he'd have random customers coming in and making calls. But I thought that was a clever, crafty way of saving money, which, you know, is the Dave Marcus way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
At one point, he's walking through parts of the building. He's like, "I didn't rent this. Like, we didn't have this space." So I don't know why the fuck they were in the back of the building, like, when he didn't even rent the space back then. Stapleton asked him if he had any pictures of this garage, and he said, "I wasn't one for pictures. I was working all the time," which definitely, again, sounds like the Dave Marcus story. He does speak lovingly of the Arcadia Dairy Bar, which was across the street. I think he got more excited talking about that than he did talking about anything in the
episode. I get it, man. Himself. I get it.
He mentions that, real quick. When there was another younger kid in the shop that was working, and when he got introduced to this younger kid, the younger kid seemed way more excited about Dave than, the manager, even though the kid knew nothing about NASCAR anyways, but at least he was excited there was a race car driver there. From there, Dave drives down to the other shop with Stapleton in the car, and they're kind of talking about Dave's old houses. I guess Dave, when he moved down to the Carolinas, he actually, like, they lived in a trailer forever, and they moved the trailer down to the Carolinas with him from Wisconsin. Lived in that until they bought a house, and it wasn't until their 50s that he went and actually moved into a house. So Dave's like explaining all this shit as they're driving through the countryside, and then Dave runs a red light. He's like, "I know this light, I know it ain't ready," and he just kind of laughs at the camera. So, you know, Dave commits a crime, that's cool. And he mentions how, again, he built this garage before he bought a house, because his logic was, if I ever want to get a decent sponsor, I got to have a decent shop. So that's what he did. They get to the race shop, and before they actually get into the shop, there is a ad that Stapleton does for a meal prep service that, I don't know, man, like, there's a lot of different YouTubers that do these ads, and, like, I don't know why sponsors want them to do them, because, like, this dude has, I don't know, man. He shouldn't be on camera. Like, I don't love his style of interviewing where he's behind the camera, but he shouldn't be on camera because he just has this goofy stare on his face the whole time. And I don't really want to hear, like, about a YouTuber cooking his meals. But at the very end of this ad, I don't know if it's his girlfriend or some other woman or something, but he basically, like, browbeats this girl into giving an endorsement of the service. This girlfriend, the girl talks about how her dad loved the steaks and like basically again browbeats this girl into saying like, yes, the order with the site, yes, they used your discount code. So great ad. Just I hope he got every penny with that one. So they get to the garage and they're poking around there a little bit, and Dave mentions, for some reason, Stapleton asked him when he decided to stop racing and if he wanted to continue the team after he got out of the car. And he talks about how he briefly ran some races with Dick Trickle in the car. And he tells a story about how the team was in Atlanta, and Dave was, I forget where, but he was doing IROC stuff. And he ended up at Parnelli Jones's house afterwards, hanging out. And they turn the race on, and immediately Dick Trickle crashes in the car. So Dave's like, I guess I should never turn the TV on while my car's racing at this point.
Maybe you should have invited Andy Newsom out to the racetrack.
Going through the garage, Dave doesn't have like many cars or sheet metal or, you know, tons of stuff from the actual race team left. I guess a lot of that stuff was donated to charity, which makes sense. I mean, you know, a lot of the old sheet metal and driver suit stuff that pops up now for sale, you know, people got it from charity auctions or things like that, because that's how that stuff was obtained. If you weren't in the area and able to go to those shops or somehow scored a piece from a race, a lot of that stuff ended up in auctions,
right?
Before eBay and all that stuff. So that makes sense. Let's see. They go to the motor shop. He's showing all these old motors. He's got like an SB2 motor there with some old iron block engines, and showing all these different pieces and stuff. There's notes still on the wall, like a chalkboard of from like 97, I think I saw, with positions and set up stuff on it, which is pretty neat. They go into a parts room, and Dave explains that, you know, it's pretty well known that Dale Earnhardt hated testing, and Dave Marcus did the majority of testing for RCR. And rather than get a check from RCR for this, he just got all their used parts. Because, you know, Dave, again, ran on a budget. And the bigger teams, you know, if a part got used once, it generally got scrapped. So
yeah.
A lot of this stuff, Dave had no problem using. He thought, rather than worrying about it breaking, well, it was used once, so that means it's proven. So
fair.
That was his logic behind used parts. And let's see here.
Also, for those of y'all listening who don't know who Dave Marcus is, he's a journeyman. He raced for how many years? Like 40, 50 years in the Cup Series?
Something like that, yeah. From the 60s up till 2002 or 3.
And he always in the car. He never had nice racing shoes or whatever. He always wore a pair of leather wingtips.
Yep.
From the time he started till the time he stopped.
Yep. And
fourth on the all-time starts list, too, like 883 starts, which is insane.
Yeah, and when I say that he looks exactly like he did when I was a kid, I'm not kidding. It looks just right down to the fucking Goodyear hat. It's the same one. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Well, he's had, you know, I guess he said Goodyear sent him cases of those things back in the day.
Yeah, so, well, he's still working through them. That's for sure.
Yeah, that I got to get one of those. But back to the parts room. So, at some point, he points out there's a bunch of wheels at the very top of the shelf. And apparently, they were their very first wheels used in IROC. And I forget what he said they were made out of, maybe magnesium or something, some cast wheels. But he said they were very, very valuable. Dave managed to hop on a ladder and climb right up to him. And who knows how these were obtained, because he said, I'll tell you the story of those off the tape. So clearly they were not just given to him, or who knows how he obtained them. But I'm sure there's a good story behind those, and I'm sure Ray Evernham's hitting him up at this point. They go into another parts room, and so I said I want to go to this shop, and obviously this is to pick the place, because they go through this one room, and there's piles of decals, and there's this like fucking blue battery charger, like rolling battery charger, that's painted up like his early 90s 71 car. And it's like, man, I gotta pull some American Picker shit and go to the shop and see if like what I can get out of there with, because there's so many cool things where I'd love to do some wheeling and dealing. And I feel like Dave would maybe just do some of that. Like, I know he's always worked on a budget, and he's got this garage full of shit that's just sitting there. So that is my goal for this year. I have a couple connections that I could probably use to get in there. So we'll see if that pans out. But going through the shop, again, just a lot of stuff. They end up, he shows us some like air cleaner covers and other shit. And the line that he said was, that was a never ending battle, that restrictor plate crap. So Dave was clearly not a plate race guy. then they get to his old office, which Dave kind of rambles in his old office, but this room was definitely built in 1987 and never changed once, because the original wood paneling is still up. There's papers and boxes and posters and pictures and shit everywhere. He tells kind of a long-winded story of some picture of a dog on a wall that was in a bar, and he traded a picture of his car for, and just very long-winded stuff. And again, if the Stapleton dude was maybe a little bit better with this line of questioning, maybe we'd have a little more complete stories rather than Dave just rambling. Not that I mind listening to Dave ramble about shit for 20 minutes, but you know, maybe if you had some better questions, it would be a little more of an interesting interview.
I feel like Dave is kind of like the quintessential old man, where he will just talk and ramble about absolutely anything.
Oh, for
and
sure.
The Stapleton kid or guy was not great at questions, so Dave basically just carried the whole show himself.
Yeah. This is where he does talk a bit about his Wisconsin short track days, and you know, he says, he was a very good short track racer, obviously. In 1965, he said he ran 92 races and won 52 of them, which is pretty fucking good. I guess when he finally came down to NASCAR, Richard Petty was one of the first drivers to welcome him into the garage, which he got a kick out of, because he said even though we were not that far apart in age, how he learned about NASCAR was through Hot Rod Magazine. And, you know, Petty's got plenty of coverage in Hot Rod Magazine back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he was accused of being a Yankee when he first got down there. But his quote was, "I'm not a Yankee. I'm a Midwesterner. The Yankees are from the Northeast."
Correct.
Which, again, is very true. That's what,
that is correct.
But that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, if you're a Dave Marcus fan, this is obviously well worth watching. If you're a fan of the history of the sport, it's well worth watching.
Also, if you're a fan of wood paneling, this is also worth watching.
So. And trash.
Yeah. which I am a fan of all of those things. So. Yeah.
And awkward interactions. It's got all. It's got everything.
It's got it all.
So yeah, any final thoughts from you guys? I enjoyed this video. Again, I don't know how much of this dude's stuff I'll be watching from here on out, but I will be trying to get to that shop.
Yeah, like I said, the presentation's a little dry. It always is. And I do appreciate how much space he gives the folks he's interviewing to kind of go off. But it's a valid criticism that you probably could have gotten a little more out of with a little more direction. But yeah, I can't recommend this guy's channel enough for just the sheer content and getting to see these guys just kind of be themselves in their space. It definitely feels like you just popped into the shop and you happened to catch Dave or whoever else happened to be in there on that particular day, if it's a different driver or shop he's visiting. It's some nerd shit for sure. For more fair weather or newer fans, it might be a little bit much information, but if you're an old diehard like us, this is definitely worth watching.
For sure.
I just really want to know why his girlfriend was carrying around that blanket the entire time.
With their dog on it.
With their dog on it and the name Shelby all over it. But there's no dog.
Shelby's in the car.
Well, I want to see Shelby, the actual dog.
I need a welfare check on Shelby.
So, with that said, this coming weekend, NASCAR is going to be in Martinsville. And it is also the 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports, of their first start. So, in tribute to that, I picked some videos about Rick Hendrick. So, there's three videos I chose here, and they're all fairly short, so you're looking at about a half hour, not even total, with these three videos. The first one is a 1987 ESPN Speed Week segment on Rick Hendrick starting the 25 car at the 1987 Riverside race. It's a nice little seven-minute interview, and again, it's early on in the days of Hendrick Motorsports. You know, for those who weren't aware, this was during the time that Tim Richmond was dealing with his diagnosis, and he was sick and in and out of the car, so that's why Rick got in that car that day. And Rick had done a little bit of racing prior to that, so it wasn't like he was inexperienced, but there's a little segment on that. From there, though, there's a couple more interesting videos, and the first one, again, is very short, but a couple years ago, there was a visitor to Hendrick Motorsports by the name of Mark Zuckerberg. So we get a nice little 2-minute clip of Mark visiting the shop. And then from there, I found another video from last year where Sammy Hagar goes and does a tour of Rick Hendrick's old car collection. So those are going to be your videos of the week for next week. Again, honoring Rick Hendrick and his 40 years in NASCAR. So it'll be an interesting mix next week. So check the playlist for that.
My boyfriend Andy got to do a tour of Rick Hendrick's like private collection 2 years ago. So I'll have to ask him more about that.
That is really cool. And I've
said, speaking of Hendrick, we also forgot the DARF of the week, which is Hendrick related.
Oh, that's true.
Oh yeah, we did.
The DARF of the week. So let me just pull the link up here. For whatever reason, that one open in Twitter. We're opening it right now, folks. We're doing it live. A guy named Rob Blount on Twitter. He's not the DARF of the week. He just presented it to us. There's a guy in some white Carhartt khakis wearing a shirt that he very clearly printed up himself, probably on just some website where you can put text on whatever, and it says "Anyone but Hendrix" on the back. And it's great, yeah, but it's real dumb. And you know, I get that sentiment. It's fine, but it's Hendrick Motorsports here. Not to get too picky about what a man's last name and legacy is, especially as we approach this weekend. So. He's my DARF for the week. Google Rick Hendrick.
That's your sentence. He's standing at a merch hauler. Walk over to the Hendrick merch hauler and look at all the merch.
Yeah.
See if you see an S on it anywhere.
Again, I'm all about fans, and whether he's a new fan or not, this has been a problem with NASCAR for as long as Rick Hendrick has been in the sport. People just can't say the fucking name right, but just do a little research, please, before you give your $30 to Redbubble or wherever the fuck you got it from.
Real quick, though, a brief T-shirt note. So after the race on Sunday, I got a phone call from my buddy Bobby from Bobby Blaze Vintage, another fine NASCAR and racing shirt dealer. Mm-hmm. He was another one that managed to get the Bitch It's Race Day shirt, and he wanted to rub that in my face. So again, I'm still looking for one of those in a large. So, hopefully.
If I go to Talladega in a couple weeks, I'll keep an eye out for you.
They hand those things out of the door down at Talladega, so... Also, one more thing about Hendrick before we move on, not to bring the mood down. Also, real quick, I've said it on the show 10 times. If you can go to the shop, the museum there is fucking awesome. It's definitely worth a stop. It's completely free. It's incredible. Do yourself a favor. Also, I recommend looking up the Hendrick plane crash. They lost a good chunk of their team going into a Martinsville weekend several years ago. And there's a big fountain on the grounds in honor to all the folks that lost their lives. Ricky Hendrick, of course, Rick's son, who was supposed to take over the business. Randy Dorton as well. Again, I'm glad you kept it a little bit lighter than that, because that tends to be the thing people always go to. But it is definitely worth checking out that history, because it's a big piece of the motivation behind that team.
Yep, and also why you're always going to see that blue and white Hendrick Cars paint scheme.
Yeah, original truck that was featured on is in that museum as well. It's always kind of cool to stand in front of that and take it in. So,
yep. Like we said before, NASCAR's in Martinsville, and True Love, you're not going to this, are you?
I don't usually
go to Martinsville, right?
Yeah, no? I'm going to wait until I can go to the fall race. It's a little better.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's going to be cold.
Yep. we'll be watching. We already talked about the short track stuff going on, so I don't really know what else to say going into the weekend.
Yeah, again, ton of short track racing. If you want the little link that we always hand out, hit us up. It's all on there. That guy's been posting all kinds of good shit. So if you want to partake in some of the stuff we're talking about that you might not have an opportunity to watch because you haven't bought the subscriptions, hit us up and we'll happily share it. Again, we've had a lot of people reach out about that, and then I've had some great conversations with folks getting back into short track racing or getting into it for the first time. So again, I know that Flo and World Racing Group probably hate that shit, but I'm in the business of sharing and getting you into the things that we all love. And so if you want that, please, please, please always hit us up. I'm happy to share it.
Hey, listen, if it wasn't $30 a month or whatever, I'd pay $5-$10 a month, no problem. But $30-$50 for some of these services, I don't know
how it adds up. Yeah, it adds up.
Like I said, hit us up at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram and Meet Me at DeBee's on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens and all the things. SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com. I mentioned it a few weeks ago, but
in honor of the big Hendrix 40th weekend, I will be doing a big drop of Hendrix stuff from the 80s up until today. Nice. So check the page all weekend, and I'll be posting that stuff probably starting Friday, but we'll see.
Very cool.
True Love, what's your handle? I forgot.
There's something about a snake in there and some mountains and my name.
Okay. Let's do the math, folks.
There you go.
Rob Motes _ unofficial on Instagram. My band's called These Wild Plains. You won't be seeing shit from me on either of those coming up. Plains is in a little bit of a writing break after our little tour, but we'll have some new stuff coming down the pike. You know how it goes. But also, like I said, I'll be at Thompson all weekend, or at least on Saturday anyway. And if Friday, I can make it down to the practice session. If the rain holds off, I'll probably be wandering around there. So come say what's up. Have a beer with me. I'll probably be parked over in turn 4 in a lawn chair, as always. And I would love to see some of the fans. Come on out.
Cool. Well,
yeah,
looks like our check is here. So
report on that one.
Yes, I will talk all sorts of modified talk that y'all...
Oh, yeah, that's your first races of the year this weekend, isn't it?
Well, I went to the Chili Bowl, but this is the first. It doesn't really count in that regard. This feels like it was tacked on to last year. But yeah, this is my first pavement race of the year and sort of the traditional start of racing up in New England. It's always a blast. And again, the weather looks pretty good for both days. It'll be a little cold, but again, yeah, come on over. I'll bring a blanket or something. You can sit next to me and we'll talk some shit.
There you go. Well, looks like our check is here, so thank you again for joining us at Applebee's, and we'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you at the NASCAR Cafe, fuckers. God, that restaurant's gonna suck. Fuck me.